Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Phil, and Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron and Cap tomorrow as the Earth, the Midnight Bombers. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, join Aphasia and Baba as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. And then on Monday mornings, a split between Victoria Frost and the Hearts of LMP or Mistress M, Mistress Frost and Mr. M, bringing you the Black Lace Diaries. These shows are designed to student color outside the lines with rich raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host, Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam. What's doing?
Howdy, Rex. How's it going?
All right.
Awesome sauce. Well, we got a great lineup of poetry tonight. Looking forward to hanging out with you and maybe the other cool poets. It's been a kind of nice, relaxing day. I've been inside hiding from the snow, made a crock pot of a split pea soup with the ham bone from the Christmas ham. And, you know, life is just good. So...
So in other words, you brought Linda Blair into the pictures to feed you.
Oh, I knew you'd have to bring up The Exorcist. I just knew it. I thought, you know, I'm going to mention my split pea soup and he's going to bring up Linda Blair. Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Oh, man, I remember that movie. It's been a long time since I watched it, but there was definitely some creepy scenes in it.
Yeah, just a few.
Yep, exactly. All right, well, we do have somebody on hold, so I'll go ahead and bring them on, and I'd like to welcome Randy. What's that?
That would be Randy.
Hello.
Randy,
yes,
how you
hello,
doing?
Hello, Randy.
How are you guys
doing
this
good.
Morning?
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Having a good Christmas and holiday season?
So far, yes. How about you guys?
Excellent.
Definitely.
Great. Glad to hear that.
Glad you could. Yeah. I got to see a couple of my kids, so that was good. One of them, unfortunately, came down with being sick, so... didn't get to see him as planned. And then, he's the one, like, he's the kid that eats the most food. He's, like, the 6'2" tall 19-year-old who, like, eats enough for an army and still remains skinny. So I cooked a whole bunch of food thinking he was going to be there. And, you know, now I'm stuck with leftovers that just somehow managed to stick to my hips. So, well, look.
All right, why don't we kick things into gear?
Sounds good. And Randy, I see that you can't stay long, which is understandable. And so I've gone ahead and put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Mine was, the prompt was just All Art is Exorcism, a quote by Otto Dixon. Titled Balancing Act. Poetry is a written form of art and thus open to be criticized, often an emotional release, but not all demons get exorcised. Poet in a state of fluctuation and constant turmoil, knowing the writing will either be embraced or face a recoil. The lives of artists, poets, are filled with many ups and downs, rarely called genius, often looked upon as untalented clowns, pouring out their hearts onto canvas or spill it out with paint, and then letting the whole world know exactly what they think. Never seeking pity, that doesn't really ever cross their mind. A good review and appreciation, the reward they hope to find. And building emotional calluses to ward off others' derision as they bare their soul by exposing their dreams and visions. The artist and the poet pours into a society's imagination, offering the gentle as well as the savage for its examination, creating a precarious existence for these determined souls, making art from inner chaos, which helped design their roles. In poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Absolutely. This is wonderful. I'm glad you were inspired to write for the contest. And the Otto Dix quote from this contest, it was the only prompt we had in it, was all art is exorcism and visions to the dream of my time. Painting is the effort to produce order in yourself. There's much chaos in me, much chaos time. And I like the direction that Randy took his inspiration for the quote, for rhyme and flow. And the main message that I got from it was that, you know, any type you
Pam, where'd you go? Hello?
You're there.
No, I'm still here. Okay, Pam left.
Okay, then let me get into it until she gets that figured out on the back end. All right, between the picture and the voice, Randy, the first thing that came to mind was Leon Russell's Tightrope. That song was all about a balance act between fate and hope, so to speak. And this kind of hits on that notion, too, the thought we're getting demons exorcised, the matter of throwing your voice out so you can get the thoughts down to paper. And ups and downs, yes, because you find those people who are just, they enjoy derision as compliments rather than offering up a cogent thought to either better the piece or at least give an idea as to what they thought might work a little bit better for it. Give, you know, help the guy out, give an honest creative touch approach to it, so to speak. And the idea being there's too much derision on that level because those people really don't have any underlying viewpoint other than, you know what? What I think is what I think, and it doesn't matter what anybody else offers up for interpretation. I'll always hound somebody because it makes me feel better, so to speak. And the thought in that last stanza being the artist does walk into that role of offering up society's imagination because a lot of people don't know how to express, but there are plenty of those who do know how to express themselves visually or within the written word or within music or any other art form that gives relief to them and gives a note to those who actually read that, beauty still lies within the eye of the beholder, so to speak, or the ears.
Yeah.
Well said there,
Pam, you're back yet?
I am. You know what it is? Jeremy wanted me to do shots with him, so I had to do a couple shots with Jeremy, and then I said, you know what, Jeremy, we really ought to be on the show with Rex and Randy. So I brought him with me. Kicking and screaming. It's hard to get him away from doing those rounds, I tell you. Sheesh. But did you guys actually hear any part of my brilliant comment?
Probably about a half a dozen words before you phased off.
My call dropped. Sorry about that. But, yeah, I really appreciated this, right? I'm glad you were inspired. You know, it had, as always, wonderful rhyme and flow. I liked the message that when you put yourself out there, you know, you're going to get, as an artist, you're going to get both criticism and praise. And I like how you mentioned in this one line that, but, you know, emotional, often in an emotional release, but not all demons get exercised. And I also really like the line, the artist and the poet explores into society's imagination, offering the gentle as well as the savage for its examination. And what I like about that is you remind us that poetry doesn't fit into a box. It can be gentle and beautiful. It can be savage, because sometimes the savage is what people need to see in order to be aware of a society that's falling apart. So just a really strong right there, Randy, and very well done. And welcome, Jeremy. Glad you could join us.
Good to be here, guys.
How you doing?
Doing good, buddy. How are you? Happy holidays.
Oh, absolutely. Happy holidays. Did you get to read Randy's piece?
I'm trying to catch up because you know I'm hip deep in frankincense and myrrh, but I do appreciate what Pam just said about this. If we're talking about any kind of artwork, Randy, anything, I mean, that's where the beauty lies. And I really appreciate what Pam just said about the savage, unrestrained passion that goes into anything when you're talking about art. And anytime that I read any kind of poetry, I feel that is what shines through when someone really dives into either a genre, a feeling, or an emotion and really lets their heart come on the line. And that's the beauty of the artwork that is poetry. And the fact that you kind of put that in a framework and kind of explained that in this narrative poem from my brief exposure to it just now, I really appreciate that you kind of explain that, because I think it's something that's very often lost. I think people are very intimidated when you say poetry. They're very intimidated by the fact that it's something that's much more intellectual or very much more structured. And people forget that what the heart of poetry is just that. It's pinpointing the savage, the emotion, the raw, the now, the moment. And I think I really appreciate that you kind of illustrated that and what you conveyed here.
Thank you.
Great comments, guys. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, where would you like to dig into next?
All right. Up next, we have the wrong poem. Let me try this again. All right.
Did you drop again?
I did not. I'm just quietly grabbing the link and fingering while I'm doing that. You guys would be talking. But it's a good idea.
I forgot to pick up this one. I got to go back in here and get that. And here we go. Put it up on board.
Yeah, I know. I'm usually mumbling to myself. I should do that. That's the reason I mumble to myself, so people know I'm still around. All right. Up next, we have the last carryover from the Eddie Izzard contest, which is Midnight Dreary by Sinister Spittle. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Midnight Dreary by Sinister Spittle. A foul wind from the south does blow, stirring vacant glares, gleaming luminously. Vast stars through archways. Can it be a facade? These shadows wall of defiant, muddy corridors of lost silhouettes without voices cry, nameless ebony figurines with crimson portal frozen, with mystery and gold hung on weary wall clocks. Plutonian shiver. Frozen in countless moments by a dying embrace, they see meager sustenance in your pride live on fear. Fear outlives foolish pride, laughs at your resolve, gorging on the predisposition of the hit makes failure. Agony living, rash nightmares send shivers down steely spines, clandestine orbs of creepy sensation wash over you. It's raging cruelty that hangs on a foul breath, openly omnipotent, its down to the dark places, triggers woe. Silent screams shriek through the dust, their crawling poster wallowing near, defiant as grayscale, then transitions black, obtrusively tampering with feeble mind, poster to your presence set to devour all souls. And punk. And Randy, why don't we start with you since you can't stay too long?
Well, this was certainly a dark poem on the dark side, and I'm not familiar with what the prompt was, but it's a very, as his name implies, very sinister sounding poem. I like, can it be a facade? These shadows wallow defiant, muddy corridors, lost silhouettes without voices cry, nameless ebony figurines with crimson portals frozen. It's Miss Crint's gold hung on weary wall box. Very unique wording in this poem throughout, and it's every stanza and every line conveys a heaviness and a darkness. And so I thought it was very intriguing, and I hung on every line. I liked it.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. And Jeremy, how about you?
You guys, Pam said this was from your Izzard prompt. Is that correct?
Yes.
Because it says, yeah, it says in the contest that it was from your Izzard. And so what I took from this is, yeah, it's a really dark, foreboding poem. But the fact that it's talking about Izzard, someone that puts themselves out there, when you talk about standing in front of an audience or exposing yourself with comedy or just being out in front of everyone to be exposed or judged or whatever, the fear in this, the darkness, the fact that someone could be – you're not going to experience this darkness unless you have the courage or you're brave enough to stand up and expose yourself. And so this kind of – when it was being read, I felt the fear in it. I felt the fear of failure. And the fear of after you expose yourself, you try to go out there, be on the world, be on the world stage. This kind of dark little nugget of blackness has got to live in your heart. And the fact that you can overcome that would be the success. So I like the fact that all of the fear and the darkness is so punctuated in this poem. And I think it's a very interesting prompt to attribute this kind of right to.
Excellent. I like that thought, Jeremy. Thank you. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like how Randy noticed the heaviness of the lines, of the vibe of the poem. And I really liked how, I'm sorry, dang it, I'm blanking on someone's name I should know. Jeremy. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I really like how Jeremy fits within it.
Wow. You just broke my heart.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's
it was
the shot.
Horrible. It was. But I liked how you mentioned that the idea that you saw the fear within the lines, the fear of putting yourself out there. And the reason I like that is because it opened my mind up to a new way to see the poem. It's really good to see Sin. You haven't seen his poetry in a while. It's good to see him writing Phone of Your After Midnight Shows, Rex. I like how he separates each stanza with two words, vast archways, draconian shivers, agony living, triggers woe, which almost becomes a poem within itself. I thought there was a really strong mind, imagery, and metaphors that did have a dark, heavy tone to it. I really like Frozen in Countless Moments by a Dying Embrace. They see meager sustenance in your pride, live on fear, fear outlives foolish pride, laughs at your resolve, gorging on the predisposition of the it makes failures. And rash nightmares send shivers down steely spines, cleanse thine orbs of creepy sensations wash over you. There's really, to me, this kind of this whole idea of within this of a loss of individuality and freedoms, and time period of within a time period of mind control. But and that I will say was what my original thought was. You know, hearing, like I said, hearing Jeremy's comment makes me see the poem in a different light. But I felt like sharing what my original thoughts were, because there is this real sense of, to me, of just losing yourself, your identity. And so I thought it was definitely very well done and thought-provoking.
Nicely said, Pam. Well, I'm going to go with two thoughts. First off, between the title and the single lines, there's an inside poem there. Midnight Jury, vast archways, draconian shivers, agony living triggers woe. I thought that was a nice touch. Whether it's meant or not, I don't know. But it does kind of sink into the dreariness that it imposes. And I think Jeremy's thought, this kind of also walks that thought of going on stage and doing a comedy act, and then knowing at any moment something could bomb so horrendously as to take you off track, and then all of a sudden you've got those vacant glares gleam luminously. You've got that moment in time frozen, and it kind of seems like a dying embrace, because you're wallowing in the moment, and all of a sudden you've got to find that steely nose that fits you back on the track of actually making it. And then that last stanza, silent streams shriek through the dust, they're crawling close, the wallowing near, deviant is grayscale and transitions black. It's kind of that note to the end of the show of, I actually made it out alive, so to speak. And the thought with feeble minds, just hit on that note. If you've got a feeble mind and you're trying to do a comedy on stage, boy, will you get eaten alive, as he puts on that that last line, set to devour all souls. You got to have some thick skin to play that motif, as well as keep the role going, as to even when something bombs, you still walk away alive, so to speak, instead of destroyed. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right. Well said there, Rex. And up next we have Be Angry at the Sun by Martha Gettle. And, yes, we are now going into carryovers from the Be Angry at the Sun contest. So goes like this. Be angry at the sun for setting, mourn all you're not getting. For life is but a merry-go-round, we all go up and down. What we did yesterday, we still have to do today. Be angry at the sun for setting. Keep track of all you're regretting. It's all just a race that we run. There's nothing new under the sun. Be angry at the sun for setting. So much there is, no forgetting. Memories haunt us day and night. They're a pull we can't seem to fight. Be angry at the sun for setting. So much that comes in life is upsetting. For death, when it comes to call, is the biggest upset of all. Be angry at the sun for setting. But if we fill our life with regretting, we'll miss the beautiful sunrise, it's true. Be thankful and rejoice in what's been given to you. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Martha, this is very different from your usual input. Thank you. Get some comments. Jeremy, what'd you think?
Hey, guys, happy to call in. My name is Jeremy F. I call in from time to time. It's a pleasure to meet you both. I am happy to be part of this. My name is apparently very easy to forget for some, Pam.
Oh,
see what did you see what I did there? And it's Christmas time, too, Pam. I was convinced that if you were reading, you were definitely going to sing one of Martha's poems for me, but apparently not. All right.
You should have been on Rex's Rhythm and Rhyme show last night. Me and Rex were both singing.
That's what I get from
it. It was pretty nuts. Nothing but nonstop parodies last night.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, Martha. Back to the serious critique. No, what was cool about this poem for me from Martha is often, very often, you think of carpe diem or the dawning of a new day as an opportunity. And this looks at it as more of the drudgery of a day, the routine of day to day. And there's really a downtrodden feel of all of this. And it's kind of a, oh my gosh, the sunset again. That means I'm going to have to go through what the day brings yet again. And there's just that heavy weight. So it's kind of the opposite. Instead of opportunity and optimism, I like how she kind of looked at it and she took the theme of be angry at the sun and carried that heavy burden of whatever life's burden is for the narrative voice. And I like that it was very strong, and it's a perspective that you never think of. When you think of a new day or the dawning or the end of a day, it's rest and peaceful and thanks. And this is the 180 of a whole different way of looking at it. So I appreciated the poem for that unique perspective.
Great thoughts, Jeremy. Thank you. Pam, how about you?
I really enjoy these couplets with the rhyme. She did a good job with that. I like that it does have that message of the monotony of the day. I also felt like it kind of had the message of regretting that it was already at the end of the day and feeling like you got nothing accomplished that you wanted to, that once again you wasted time, either, you know, by not spending time with people who are important to you or, you know, just this whole idea of regret and wasting. And I really like this all the way through, but the ending couplet is particularly nice in that it adds a positive note in the idea of, you know, being thankful for what we do have, rejoicing for what we do have. And I also really like the lines, it's all just a race that we run, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, it just really touches on the whole idea that throughout the centuries there's been this almost constant rat race of humanity, but it just keeps, you know, getting worse and worse. There's this competitiveness as far as in workplaces and such, and even in life, to be the perfect, you know, whatever it is that you want to be perfect at, that, you know, really makes you regret when you look back in life and think, you know, what did I actually do that made me satisfied, me happy? What did I do that made others happy? So, you know, excellent write and very well done.
Nice to say, Pam. Thank you very much. All right. Be angry at the sun title. And then to use the quote itself, be angry at the sun for setting and keep pounding that in as a note every couple of stanzas along, just to hit on that notion of be angry at the sun for setting. It's kind of that thought of life moving day by day until you die, which is how she kind of laid it out. And hits on that note of keep track of all you're regretting, keep track of all that you're regretting. Is that notion of you want to make amends or at least put that to bed before the last sun doesn't rise for you as the motif. And you know, like you said, that last notation, we'll miss the beautiful sunrise. It's true. Be thankful and joyous in what's been given you. There's that note to that. Take care of all that you have day to day, but also take care of that which you feel responsible for in notation to knowing that somewhere down the line, that sun won't rise and you could go off into your sunset, so to speak, with some painful regrets that weren't taken care of in the meantime. Nicely done, Martha. All right, Pam, back to you.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Up next we have To the Message by Lockdown Larks. And Jeremy, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Death to the Message by Lockdown Larks. Chorus. No one hearing the music, no one listens to the song. No one gets the message, a world still not getting along. No one hearing the music, Did we get a little respect? No one gets the message. It's trolls who now connect. No one hearing the music. Who asks what's going on? No one gets the message. Brutally, still so strong. No one hearing the music. Did anyone ever imagine? No one gets the message. Waiting for the next assassin. No one hearing the music. When was the mercy, mercy me? No one gets the message. Still talking, still taking down ecology. No one hearing the music. Remember Ebony and Ivory? No one gets the message. Still no racial harmony. No one hearing the music. Did we ever give peace a chance? No one gets the message. Waiting for the next war dance. No one hearing the music. When did they play the drive song? No one gets the message. Famine still going strong. Chorus. Final lyric to be recited by children, not sung and without music. Don't put these words to music. Not another song misunderstood. Don't be deaf to the message. Give us a future that is good. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got on lockdowns?
I really liked this. I liked it. That was really strong, strong lyrics. Wonderful chorus. No one hearing the music. No one listens to the song. No one gets the message. World still not getting along. You know, this whole idea that people are just, you know, into themselves, they're arrogant. I like how he reminds us that it's trolls who now connect, that too much of communication is done online, you know, and too much of it's people just simply arguing with each other, and not even arguing, but just even downright bullying. I really like where the stanza, where it ends with, wait, no one gets the message, waiting for the next assassin. That whole idea that eventually, like to me, I see the assassin as the next assassin as that metaphor for consequences for actions and choices made. So really just an excellent write on how the world is becoming more and more about disconnecting and more about bullying and not learning how to take care of ourselves, of as a community and as the earth. So really just a strong write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jeremy, you got to read this. How about your thoughts?
I liked all the references in each stanza to other famous songs. I mean, obviously this is a very lyrical poem, but I liked what Pam alluded to in Imagine. That made me think of John Lennon and talked about the next assassin. Mercy, Mercy Me, talking about Marvin Gaye, and then the song there when he talks about ecology and the state of the world and the environment. Ebony and Ivory, obviously Stevie Wonder, Paul McCartney song on the racial harmony. Get Peace a Chance, next war dance. I mean, there's all these different references to famous songs. And I think that was really clever. I like how he did it, and I like the fact that he's deaf to a message in the title, and it's all written as a lyrical song. So I think there's a lot of clever interplay throughout this poem that came across really well.
Great thoughts, and you left me with nothing to say because you took everything. Nicely done. And the obvious expound on the obvious thought, the sort of opening up, no one hearing the music, each stanza kind of plays on that note of the reference to you're not listening to the music, you're not paying attention to the voice, the sound that's being offered, and the message that rings in those songs, everything that you've hit on this, nobody is paying any heed to that. I mean, especially you hit on that note of give peace a chance, and then that thought with imagine and waiting for the next assassin, which kind of bolts on a couple other ideas, because you hit on the thought of trolls, which kind of hits on the Twitterati and those Snapchats or whatever else, where everybody's just pissing on everybody else just for the sake of pissing on everybody else because they're anonymous. They don't have to hold themselves to account because nobody will ever know who or what they are or ever see them. So it's easy. And then again, that kind of rolls back to the thought. That is one message you should be ignoring instead of paying attention to, because the more attention you give to them gives them larger voice than hand. If you ignore them, they eventually go away and get tired. Nicely done. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. I did want to say, I think it would be cool to have him record this song or have somebody record it to just get his idea of what the music is supposed to sound like. Because I noticed that in the end course, he says the final lyrics be recited by children, not sung and without music. And there's something about children reciting, especially when it's a kind of a dark topic, that adds to the eeriness of it. So I would definitely want to hear that.
Well, that thought within that last one is kind of like the a cappella. You let those work, kind of like what Morrison used to do, interject a spoken word in the middle of a song. And it's never, it fits in musically, but it's always done as a straight draw in the moment and without anything. But just the thought
exactly.
That strikes him in the moment. You off change that angle.
Yep.
But this bottom end, the thought is for the kids to offer up the darkness by interjecting, don't be deaf to the message. Give us a future that is good, looking towards that which might not be there somewhere down the line.
Absolutely. And you're right, that definitely would add to the strength of those lines. And it very much is like how, as you said, Morrison would add in that spoken word in his song.
And Fazy's on the blower.
Oh, Fazy. Okay, cool. All right, I'm going to go ahead and bring her on. Welcome, Faziana. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Hey, Faze.
So far, so
hey, Rex. And whoever else is here?
Jeremy.
Hey, Fazy. Good to see you. Glad to have you aboard.
Hey, Jeremy.
Up next we have The Gravity Beyond Our Blame by Robert J. Teese. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. The Gravity Beyond Our Blame by Robert J. Teese. The universe absorbs our faults, although we are to blame again. Another thing comes tumbling down, and gravitation takes the fall. A fence collapses, avalanches, mudslides plunge the land in muck. A paradise becomes unmade. We mourn and move in retrograde. How should we reckon with descent? With which excuse? To what extent? We prop our reasons with emotions, keep more feelings straining sense. Then seem surprised when just an ounce of truth would prove the tipping point, propelling yet another crash. Upon the slopes, our sliding hopes, rare species vanished, forest leveled, pages burning, lesser learning, glaciers melting, choices dwindling, exhausted sources none renew, vital numbers plunged past zeros, worlds crumbling while we look away. Among my failures I have found positions, inches, influence, the constancy of what can stay. The losses add up, how they weigh. Humility has counseled me. I cannot scapegoat gravity, nor point to physics like a child who fearfully must pin the guilt of having busted something dear on anybody else so he shall not be grounded, still may play. Four dump trucks barreled by today, vibrating windows, glasses, cans. New billboards boast of new estate. An architect arrives with plans. I'll sweep the shards and brace the shelf. Beware of stepping any item nowhere near a pinnacle, nor on the cracked floor with the end somewhere in the middle way between the roof, my jar of clay. It helps me keep things where they are. Now very little drops too far. And pause. All right, Daisy, you're the new body in the room. What did you think?
I like it. I like that it asks questions. How should we reckon with dissent? With which excuse? To which extent? To what extent? I like when a poem has questions that make you think. But then I kind of pause and I think about it, and so I miss part of it because I'm contemplating questions, and we keep going. Upon the slopes are sliding hopes. And then the next section kind of looks like a slope, the way that the length of the lines go. And I don't know if that was on purpose, but I thought it worked well after the upon the slopes are sliding hopes, because it's like they slide down as the forests are leveled and the pages are burning and the glaciers are melting. You know, so it's a bleak outlook, but it needs to be said. I really like, I cannot scapegoat gravity nor point to physics like a child who fearfully must pin the guilt of having busted something dear or anyone else on anyone else so he can, shall not be grounded, still may play. And that's the thing, is we all don't want to be the reason why the world is falling apart, but we play our part in that. So I think this is a really thought-provoking poem that's eloquent in its delivery.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Maisie. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, I really think this has strong and intriguing imagery and metaphors. And I have to agree with Maisie that, you know, when there is a question, questions in a poem, it really makes you stop and think. I like, we prop our reasons with emotions, heap more feelings, straining sense, it then seems surprised when just an ounce of truth would provide the tipping point, propelling yet another crash. You know, too often times when people try to argue in a point in a debate, they use emotions as facts, emotions as proof. And while, you know, there's nothing wrong with emotions, they're very valid. If we're talking about proof and facts, they're not going to do the job, and things are going to go crashing down. I also really like, I cannot scapegoat gravity nor point to physics like a child who fearfully must pin the guilt of having busted something dear on anybody else so he shall not be grounded, still may play. You know, I like the idea that, you know, at some point, and I think Fabiana touched on this, is that we have to take personal responsibility. Really just wonderful, right, strong right all the way through, and very well done.
Awesome, Pam. Thank you. All right, Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, I love that comment, Pam. I really do. And I'm not going to get into any kind of political conversation right now, but I really like your point right there where it says that reasons with emotions, and what you said about that. I 100% agree. I think that's the problem with a lot of things that everyone's going through right now, is that emotions are leading all of everyone's standpoints as opposed to anything else. So great comment, Pam. And then something that Faizy said that really struck a chord with me as well, I'm guilty of that too, Faiziana, is I come into these poems cold, and a lot of times there is a comment or a line that kind of sticks with me, and I kind of get removed from the rest of the poem, or at least for a moment, and concentrate on an individual or a line or a thought. And I think that's kind of it's a great point to the author by saying, hey, look, you made something here that was really punctuated and made me pause. And as a reader, I appreciate for that. I appreciate the poem for that one line. So in defense of that, the one that did that for me in this poem was the simple line in the third, where it says, "The paradise becomes unmade." And I kind of got lost in the thought of, yeah, paradise doesn't necessarily, or more often than not, doesn't exist unless you make it paradise, unless you either physically make it paradise by building or becoming part of it, or by appreciating it and accepting it as your paradise. So that one line really struck a chord with me, and then I liked how it was kind of picked up towards the end in the third to last stanza, where it actually became something that was built. So it was a paradise, and then it was taken away for the bulk of the body of this poem, But then I appreciated the fact that there has to be an effort and an appreciation and an identification of a paradise to make it such. So that's what stuck with me in this one.
Nicely said, Jeremy. Thank you very much. A couple of things. I found the use of rhyming in this was subtle, so it doesn't come across as heavy, but it worked well in between everything that rolls through this thought. And I too like that thought you offered up, Jeremy, a paradise becomes unmade. But it's that next line that really kind of, we mourn and move in retrograde, offering that sort of like the moon. We phase through its shadowed essence. We might mourn in the moment, but hey, a couple of days from now, it'll be in another period, and we've moved on and forgotten about it, so to speak, which was a nice touch there, as which you hit on those three questions that Daisy enjoyed as the motif to why aren't we answering these ourselves. And I, too, found that that bit about the upon the slopes, our fighting hopes, and then you get that one long line at the top, rare species vanished, and then there's that kind of a notation to the cliff edge right there, and then the cliff kind of falls into that curve as you fall, and then rolls out down to a notion of how many things are being piled up along the way, from Rimu to zeros, and while we look away, the world crumbling, so to speak. And humility, there's another one. Humility has counseled me, another single line. And the thought of blaming everybody and everything without accepting accountability yourself does put a nice spin on the motif that everybody has to take their fair share instead of dumping on everyone else and not accepting a tad bit of the blame for that which is going on, because they're part of it, just the way it is. Nicely done. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right. Up next we have It's Hard to Be Angry by S. Sharp, and it goes like this. It's hard to be angry at the sun, the moon, or popsicle sticks stuck in the ears of monkeys. However, it is even more difficult to unsing the disfigured melodies of the voiceless choir, silent, the notes written in invisible ink, untouched by those without feelings, emotionally handicapped souls rushing to slow the progress of the many, personal punishment, the code of Harambe, unfortunately totally free from the mind of Plato. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jeremy, you got to lead off on this one.
Okay.
Boy, that sounded a little contrary.
No, I'm sitting here trying to figure it out. I don't have the luxury of going after commenting after the Rex interpretation that gives me all the answers. I always want that. No, this one made me think, and I liked the second, and I liked how it was an unspoken voice that was the protagonist in this. That's what was itching in this one. The fact that it was something that was unsaid, it was that voiceless choir, that invisible ink, that unsaid thing, that heavy unspoken word that really was weighing down this. And again, I liked how it became what it was, what the narrative voice was fighting was the fact that heavy unspoken emotional baggage was indeed that. It was something that was emotional and not more logical, as he said toward the end, we were mentioning Code of Harambe or the Mind of Plato. It's not something that can be worked out logically. It's just something that's heavy and it's bringing down the room. And in these times of holiday spirit, when you have all this emotional baggage, when you're getting in there with all of your family and all that, it's a very real poem. It's a very real thing when you have something that's weighing down, that's not tangible, and it's something that you can overcome by rationalization. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of still trying to unfold it, but that's what I came away with.
Well, I think you did just fine with that comment. Nicely said. Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Baziana, how about you?
the popsicle sticks in the ears of the monkeys kind of took me by surprise.
I
got
nice
laughed out loud at that part. I loved it. it's hard to be angry at the sun, the moon, or the popsicle sticks stuck in the ears of monkeys. So even though that gave me a good laugh, I think that it's really about how, like, people are choosing not to hear things. It's just like in earlier, right as I was arriving, there was something about they don't hear. I can't remember what it was because I had just caught the tail end of it. But there was someone who had a song where they weren't hearing the lyrics. And I think this is kind of a reference to a similar thing of people aren't hearing the truth. They aren't listening. They have the popsicle sticks stuck in their ears, choosing the, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. They're choosing not to hear it. And we can't be mad at the popsicle sticks that are stopping them from hearing it. We got to be mad at the monkeys themselves. And by monkeys, I mean people. I like that it uses free from the mind of Plato to saying that people are not being philosophical enough. They're not thinking about things enough. They're just emotionally stunted and not dealing with it. So I think this is a serious poem that has a funny way of saying it, and I like that combination.
Excellent. Thank you, Faisy. All right, Pam, your turn.
Yeah, I really like how in that first stanza, which, you know, she makes nice and short, she goes from, you know, the sun, the moon, to popsicle sticks stuck in the ears of monkeys. And I think that's very effective because it goes from something almost like serious imagery, like something grand, to something just so absolutely ridiculous. I liked what Afasiana had to say about how it represents the idea of, you know, hear no evil. And I like how, again, like, then she goes into that, the thought of how oftentimes, there are those who are emotionally handicapped and, you know, just unable to progress. Now, I did have to look up the Code of Harambe, which is apparently a book of hundreds of laws from ancient Babylonia, and so to me what those ending, though, that last stanza says, and especially since it brings up that book of laws, is that too oftentimes people are really invested in making sure that laws are followed to the letter, rather than looking at, you know, how can we become emotionally available to people, how can we love people rather than how can we punish people. So really just an intriguing write, clever and very well done.
Great comments, guys. All right. I got to go with the popsicle sticks, too. I thought that was a nice, funny intro to offer up in the first thing. And like Faisy, first thing I thought was you got someone with their hands over there. It's na 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 na. You can't hear you. Can't hear you. So that's just the way it is. And then roll into the thought with disfigured melodies of the voiceless choir. It does hit on that note of the invisible ink of those people who are ignored for the sake of hey, this is my motif. This is how it is. And this is what I believe. And what was it? Emotionally handicapped souls rushing to slow the progress of the many. Than a personal punishment. The Code of Hammurabi is still considered quite the thought, just how old it was, and it laid out the law, and it was done in fairness, whether it was criminal, family, the business, and expanded on a whole number of arenas, but it laid out the law, it laid out the crime with the law, and the punishment excised based on the crime itself. So it was loaded with fairness in exactitude, and we've kind of walked that way throughout time, but I've changed and added quite a bit to it. But the thought of the back end is this free from the mind of Plato. As Faisy pointed out, that means that we're following too much of singularity instead of offering up the freedom in thought and expression, the idea of there is more than just one idea, one purview, one idiom to walk through, and nothing fits neatly into little boxes tied with bows in a singularity. Everything needs to be discerned with clarity of thought rather than the just position of, hey, this is what it is, this is how it's going to be, and this is what you need to do. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right. So, Faviana, I put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
I like that. That was the first thing I brought up this evening. Pam says that she had so much food over that she made split pea soup, and I brought up Linda Blair, and what we got here? Exorcism. I like that.
Exorcism I Perform Daily by Faziana. Cleansing the mental palate, chasing away the aftertaste of bitter binging, exhaling the flickering shadows of fury, my digital quill paints the bottled angst. Poems are remnants of exorcisms. Words spewed as toxic thought are expelled. Fear, hatred, lust, regret, jealousy, and more. Fallen angels that seek to possess this flesh are weakened as creativity molds their power into sketches and stories that lighten my burden. Armed only with pen, brush, or keyboard, we can expel the demons within us. End poem.
Great read, Faisy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Since
I saw your record.
All that stuff.
You're going to be quite amused. because considering that these eight rites are written for the art is exorcism, you're going to hear that quite a bit. We even got one poem that has a picture of Linda Blair. So.
Oh, perfect.
Right?
We can keep the roll going.
There you go. I have to say, I gave a Faviana bronze in this contest. I felt like it was a really strong write. All the way through, it had a really nice flow to it. I liked the opening line with cleansing the mental palate. I thought that was a great way to, you know, a great line to describe how poetry, writing, art, you know, can cleanse that our minds and help, you know, free ourselves. I really like how the general vibe I got from this is that, like, that we all struggle with toxic emotions, and writing helps us rid ourselves of them. I do like that she used the word spewed. I thought it worked really well with the whole exorcism prompt with the line, words spewed as toxic thoughts are expelled. I really like how this was kind of dark, but yet there was within these lines a sense of hope, a sense of, as she says, into sketches and stories that lighten my burden. It really is a brevity that shows the power of the pen. So excellent lines and very well done, Daisy.
Thank you, Pam. And Jeremy, how about you? But you got to unmute first.
Oh, Jeremy had dropped, and now he's back. Here he is.
Oh, I said so many cool things just then, Faisy. You would have been so proud of me. No, I'm glad you read this one, because I remember when you posted it, and it did strike a chord when I initially read it. Because I my process was a lot like this, and I feel this a lot, because poetry a lot builds up so much inside that I don't release it until it has to be released. And I kind of like how you called it an exorcism, and you painted it as more of a dark experience, which is very valid to me personally, because it's something that chews until you have to let it go. So I think it's kind of a cool explosion that you put on the paper, and I like the fact that it's kind of it's metaphorically written as an exorcism. It's a release of that creativity that builds within the soul. I like how in the beginning of the second, it kind of, it's not exactly verbatim, but it kind of hints in the seven deadly sins, and it kind of in the next line talks about fallen angels. So you talk, you deal with the religious aspect of exorcism without being so literal with all of it. So metaphorically, I thought it was very cool. I like the tones that you put in it, and I thought it was really well composed, Faizy. Enjoyed it very much.
Nice. I like that, Jeremy. Thank you. All right, Faizy. Pam called this a brevity, and yeah, but I see a larger brevity within this. And if you come across a contest with 25 words or less, then you need to use these four lines because they are very compelling. Cleansing the mental palate, words spewed as toxic thoughts are expelled. Fear, hatred, lust, regret, jealousy, and more. We can expel the demons within us. Now, as far as everything else, this does hit on that notion of being able to take that which sits in the noggin, so to speak, and kind of roils us one way or another, and putting together that fashion, whether it's a story, whether it's a tale, whether it's a poem, whether it's just a release in the moment. It gets the thoughts out of your mind on the paper where you can review it and understand that which you've writ and know that that's not bothering you anymore. That's outside, that is given over to someone else to enjoy as opposed to being locked inside the mind itself. And what else we got? I like the thought with the back end of this. Armed with only pen, brush, or keyboard, we can expel the demons within us. The expelling is kind of not just the cleansing notion, but the emptying of self, letting that cup pour it out so that if we can refill it with some other idea, notion, thought, or voice, which is lingering in the background, ready to unleash itself. And nicely done. All right, Pam.
Yeah, I really liked your observation about how those four lines could be a poem in themselves. So very cool there, Rex.
I have a decent idea now.
Yeah, occasionally you pull one out of your hat and surprise us all.
Well, I tell you, like Jeremy said, coming in cold. I come in cold to every piece, every night. So I have no illusions coming in. I might have illusions going out the back door, but never coming in.
There you go. All right. Well, we are going back to the carryovers from Be Angry at the Sun. And up next we have What Will It Be by Thomas D. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
What Will It Be by Thomas B. A country is a reflection of its leaders. Its course is set by the quality and character it is willing to follow and allow to rule. Those who lead are called to the challenge of rule. The question is never about who will follow. It is about how do you ensure all will arrive safely? Even better, how do we have them achieve their dreams, become better than they were when they started? True leaders are about the job at hand, how to command without having to demand only raise the level of excellence of all those about you. There are so many who are full of pretense and charisma who betray all who follow, for they lead only for their own glory. Loyalty demanded, rarely earned, so followers are constantly changing in how they close and how they are to ear of the power, always fighting to prove that they are more important than others. For who knows what the leader thinks? Who knows how much they can trust as psychopaths? How deeply they are to be trusted to do the work, to do what leaders need. Those posturing fools of braggadocio and pretense who treat truth as if no value except when it glorifies those in power, the people seen as expendable to be used, seen as fools and allowed to pay for all those that gets in the way of leaders' way. Country comes second. Laws are for fools and weakness to be exploited. Leverage to make sure others are used. A country is as righteous and as gracious, able to lead when it has the courage to follow its leaders wherever they go. The people may question and suggest and know they will be heard. They can argue and debate while things are yet to be decided, for the best ideas flow to the top when they are the waters are open for all to swim in the pool. When time comes to make a decision to be ready to be responsible for what we will be done, a leader decides to make sure it is done. No conversation is perfect. No decision is made that is right in all ways. A leader expects and even demands that we keep aware to be ready to adapt and make better whenever we can. The question the country must always ask and take us all to task: we are smart enough to choose and follow the right one? End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. Thank you very much. And I got to say, I'll open up that first, a country is a reflection of its leaders. Of course, it's that by the quality and characters willing to follow and allow the rule. Those who lead are called to the challenge of the rule. I agree with that to a point, but I must add a caveat. Reflection of its leaders. It's also a reflection of those who endear themselves, the media. That is quite the, offers up the other aspect of that reflection. Everything else in this is quite true and quite even-handed in the thought, especially that that last one, always smart enough to choose and follow the right one. Boy, does that hold its own anxious note of, ho, 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 have you made the right bloody decision? Because appear that way. Anyway, all right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like what you had to say, Rex. I thought this was a wonderful thought-provoking write on how easily people will follow someone without thinking for themselves. I wish he had put this in slightly bigger print, but I like the use of the word braggadocio, which I'm not even sure is a real word. I imagine it must be, but it seems like one of those
yes.
words. Okay. So these posturing fools will braggadocio and pretend to treat truth as if has no value except when it glorifies those in power. I like how he mentions that the idea that, truth to some is flexible in its variance. And I like in the second sentence where he says, the question is never about who will follow, it's about how do you ensure all will arrive safely. There are many who are full of pretense and charisma who betray all who follow, for they lead only for their own glory. I think that's been very true throughout history. And sycophants is another great word to use in a poem. So really just a great write all the way through and very well done.
Well, as I said, everybody loves a good ass-kisser if they know how to kiss it right. Jeremy, you got to read that. You did a great job. What do you think?
Yeah, to kind of expand on what Pam was just saying, I agree with a lot of it. I think that it's really easy to break down leaders, and I think the bulk of this poem is really aimed at that. It's really pointing a finger at leaders and saying they need to do a better job. But the not even a subtext, but the secondary finger of blame, again, to what Pam pointed out, is you need to have some responsibility on the followers as well. People need to be paying attention to what they are supporting, who they are following, and be knowledgeable and, again, not just go off of emotions, but go along and know what their values are. I think that's really what – not to get into it too much, guys, but I think that's what the problem is these days, is everyone is so ingrained in what they feel emotionally, and they're not really paying attention to what's important. So I think – what hit home for me was not the major voice in this poem, but the minor voice that I agreed with, and the fact that we all need to be paying attention much more strongly to what we're doing.
Absolutely. You got to take emotion out of the argument, because emotion only clouds the issues at hand. And like you said, if you're not paying attention to the underlying draw of what they're offering, then you're not paying attention at all because you walked down a wrong path at that note, and no one should. You keep following along party lines instead of following the individual and what they've done and how they've done it, then you make mistakes, and that's the problem. Nicely said, Jeremy. Thank you. All right, Tam, what you got?
All right. Up next, we have Money, Power, and Control by Mel C. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Money, Power, and Control by Mel C. Money, Power, and Control. These drivers are getting old as this life unfolds, spun into a web of confusion, living in this delusion of worth, entangled and entrapped, wrapped up, entitlement needing enlightenment, gasping and grasping for last breath, death of the silence to the certain. Let's slice the silk that suffocates. Let's close this curtain. Let's take those broken threads to escape the ego built in all our heads. Create a new calling while the sun is still revolving. Create a revolution for evolution. So much unknown on humanity is grown. Our souls cannot survive on money, power, control, alone, and so on. All right, Pam, you're first up.
Yeah, this was a really nice. Great read there, Rex. I like how she used the phrase web of confusion, because usually you hear web of deceit, but that phrase there really makes me think about how oftentimes people use confusion as a weapon, as a way of winning debates, because, you know, as we're going back to the idea of facts versus emotion, it's that idea of, you know, that whole thought of baffled and with bullshit, you know. And I really like, let's close this curtain, let's take these broken threads to escape the ego built in all our heads, create a new calling while the sun is still revolving. I like that this poem says, here's the problem. You know, we're all trapped in this state of confusion, and we really need to find that enlightenment. You know, I like that it calls for a revolution, an evolution in our ability. It's like, you know, like what is it they say that you use like 4% or 8% of your brain? I feel like it calls for us to use so much more of our brain than we are, but also, you know, take a look at where our hearts are. You know, what is our soul? What are our souls focused on? And if it's money and power and glory, then, yeah, we need to let that go. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jeremy, how about you?
I don't know if you guys are Warren Zevon fans, but I had the lawyers, guns, and money from the beginning of the title of the poem. I just had that track playing in the back as Rex was reading through it. So, yeah, I think Pam did an excellent job. I think this pretty much speaks straightforward in terms of its message, and I appreciate that. I like what Mel did subtly and some of her poetic device. I liked specifically the grasping and the repetition in that line, grasping and grasping for last breaths. The fact that gasping and grasping, I like the feeling of that alliteration in that line. I almost even thought it was repetition because it's so close between gasping and grasping. But then she carries that alliteration subtly through the next few lines with death and dynasty, slice, silk, and suffocates, clothes and curtains. I think she did it very – it was a very light sprinkling of that device that I think worked well. Also with the subtle rhyme and evolution and revolution. So I like it when devices are used as a spice as opposed to a main course. I'm guilty of main coursing it. And when it's done correctly as a spice, it comes across very nice. So well done, Mel.
Great thoughts, Jeremy. Thank you. You're right. I think the thought on money, power, and control is the idea that rolls within us, because it seems to have invaded everything to the point where they overlook that which is as opposed to that which they want to be. Why? Because they want that money, they want that power, and they want the control over everything. I mean, you look back over the past 18 months. 18 months ago, there was one person in the world worth $100 billion. Today, there is 10. So in 18 months, 9 extra individuals are now worth $100 billion, which kind of hints on the notion of money, power, and control. When you have it, you get to delete anything and everything of that which you wish, because you can cloud the minds of everybody with the heads of those that are willing to walk the same realm as you do of a dynasty in that motif. Nicely done, Mel. Thank you. All right, Pam. Next up.
All righty. Up next, we have The Poet in the World by Chamath Akalanka, and it goes like this. There is no more utility in the words which the writer forms poetry, long answers he finds and organizes them in couplets for their benefit, major doubts he dispenses of, thinking it is time finally to be honest, strangeness he strangles as the opium he takes, shoot him within the stars, prophecy he never notices, saying, it is good to remain within the bounds. The latter, he figures, is best served as a moment of education. In the air, is the air I breathe more precious than the earth you roam? The ideal is never the expression. The boat tends to find the harbor her closest. The empire not get born that tramples upon the usual. What binds the ocean but eons worth of struggle? Is misfortune perfect but the essence of what remains? The tender heart revolts again. He demands damnation. Just jolt he types on what remains of the white paper, coral reefs to fade upon the yellow face of the sunset. College newspaper reads another glorious year as another crow relished his teeth. The white ladder and the tight wide belongs together. All the letters form and resounding no utility where diamonds shared no canyon walls. Time is still and the movements heavy. The wordsmith becomes his companion, the blacksmith, and swords are requested with a blunt certainty for a requiem we polished. Hard steel melts under conditions of the longing earth. The high priestess announced, never mind, the queen is no more. Blood of the earth is poured down the chalice of her bosom. Tendrils of miraculous fate tried rise up were tread upon. June and July and December is the cruelest joke and poem.
Great read, Pam. There's a lot to unpack in this one. There is no more utility in the words which the writer forms poetry. Long answers he finds and organizes them in couplets for their benefit. That captures me right there. Organize them in couplets for their benefit rather than his own. Kind of hits me with the notion of walking a line to feed those instead of feeding yourself first, to the idea of the poet, the writer, the muse, whatever. Then major doubts he dispenses of, thinking it's time to finally be honest. I like the next one now. Strangers he strangles as the opium he takes, shoot him within the stars. Now there's that notion of the opium, the strangeness, something that curves the mind, offering up a thought which you can expound upon. The ideal is never the expression. And it kind of hits on the note of being safe in voice. But then again, you walk down to the back end of this, and there is that moment of hard steel melts under conditions of the longing earth. And, that was further up. And swords are requested, his companion, the blacksmith. The wordsmith becomes his companion, the blacksmith. It's that kind of a traversing notion of walking into a world instead of becoming the wordsmith. Now you're the blacksmith offering up the poison pen, so to speak, the sword that can be offered up as someone's epitaph, their eulogy. And June, July, and December is the cruelest joke. Well, June and July are usually months for marriages, and December, June and December are marriages too. But you get the idea of between the advent of summer and that to the end of the year, so to speak. There's a heavy irony in the fact that we tend to walk in those arenas because they hold strength within our souls. June for weddings, July for the celebration, and December again for a celebration. And supposed to be, but we've lost our way, and that's kind of what he's offering up as the poor thought here, as we kind of work our way from one moment to the next, and we're feeding somebody else's mind instead of offering up our own. Nicely done, Thomas. And Jeremy, how about you?
Great analysis, Rex. And I think a lot of times with these stream of consciousness poems, I'll call them stream of consciousness, these longer narratives, you can kind of go down a path that is either consistent with what the author intended or something totally different. So I appreciate what you said. I went with this as more about the process, and I appreciated Pam's read on it because it kind of reiterated her feel and what she was going through. In hearing it read, kind of explained or at least reiterated or emphasized or reinforced is what I'm trying to say, reinforced my thought about what this poem was about. And that being the process of writing and the process of creating. At the beginning of this poem, the first third, let's say, there's a lot of trying to explain what it's all about and what the intent is. And then I liked the uncertainty of this. I liked the body of it and how there was a lot of rhetorical questions that even came without question marks. And the way that Pam was reading it, she read it with the question in her voice, because the sentences start with the word is. So there's the question, but again, there's no question mark, which made me feel like it's kind of an internal indecisiveness within the entire process. And then the term for this entire poem for me was the word jolt in the middle. And that's when I felt that the creative process took control. And that's when there became the indecisiveness and the creative self-doubt in the beginning of this poem finally took ownership at that stanza at jolt. And that's when the metaphor of the whole thing started to take something more physical and mythological and metal and strong and finite. And you see that with a lot of the imagery that he talks about in the next, I don't know, three quarters of the poem. I like what Rex was going with at the end. I thought the ending stanza was the most impactful. I like the ending. But again, I took it as part of the process. June and July being the body, December being the end is the cruelest joke. That being that self-evaluation once you go through this entire process of the meat of writing or creating being the hardest part, and December being the finality of it all, that being the hardest thing to finally say that something is done. So for me, where this took me was a cool little path, so bravo, and I enjoyed the ride.
Excellent analysis. I like it. Now that makes a whole lot of sense walking down a different path. I enjoyed that, Jeremy. Thank you. And Pam, how about you?
Well, first of all, I have to say that it's been a long time since I heard you comment on a poem first, Rex, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I figured it was a long piece. I'd give you guys a little bit of a break and I'd dig into it first.
Yes, well, you know, I appreciated it because it gave me and Jeremy the opportunity to go make a fresh batch of margaritas. So thank you for that. understand. But no, I really liked your observations, Rex, and I like what you had to say about the N-line Tau. It is often most difficult in those months where there's expectations of celebrations, expectations of getting married, expectations of getting together with family and friends, and expectations of gifts. And I like how Jeremy noticed the kind of the mental almost like the confusion or the idea of not being sure of yourself, you know, until it got to that word jolt, you know. So, this really is just a wonderful thought-provoking write. It's filled with that kind of inner angst of, you know, coming up with the right words. But also, I really like the white ladder and the type Y belongs together. All letters form a resounding null, the utility where diamonds shared, no kin evolves, time is still, and the movement's heavy. It's almost like feeling like trapped in a moment that you can't seem to understand. And I did like how also it did have so many mythological references that I thought was really cool, especially the high priestess announced, never mind, the queen is no more. So very well done.
Excellent. All right. Where would you like to go next?
All right. Up next we have Seek Your Truth, However Wrong by Kenny W. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
Your Truth, However Wrong by Kenny W. The truth, and nothing but. What is truth? Have you had enough? What is one man's gospel is another man's lie. That's no surprise. So it is also no surprise when people deny death camps, viruses, God on high. It's just their opinion or misguided notion randomly chosen. Flat earthers refute all the evidence. Our spinning plate is irreverence. Broad horizons far away. Photos rejected. All hearsay. Our history is rewritten by the victors, religion true and false in the scriptures. We don't know what to believe. Illusionists can trick all that we see. Preachers and leaders spout their creed. We are sick of hearing. We have no need. Turn your TV and radio off. Close your eyes and analyze. No man really knows any better than you. Study. Decide for yourself what is true. And when you are the sun setting and you put aside all their derision, happy with your own decisions. And poem.
Hey, Reed, Jeremy, thank you very much. All right, Pam, you got the plate. What has you done?
Well, wonderful flow here. A great read by Jeremy. I like the title, Seek Your Truth, However Wrong. And to me, I like the idea that it's all about, you know, finding your own truth. But there's a real, sardonic bite within the lines of this poem. And he brings up a lot of stuff throughout history, death camps, viruses, God on high, it's just opinion or misguided notion randomly chosen. I have to say that of all these lines, my favorite is, our history is rewritten by the victors. You know, that it's very true there, in my opinion, that too oftentimes we do not, especially in public schooling, get the full picture of history, of the stories in the past. And I also really like where he goes into the stanza about the TV preachers and leaders. Turn your TV and radio off. Close your eyes and analyze. That, to me, is another important part in the idea that, you know, it's time for you to shut off the TV and the radio and really start to think for yourself. So excellent write and very well done.
Perfect, sir, Pam. Thank you. And Jeremy, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, it's a frustrating message on both ways you look at it. I can appreciate what's being said here, but it's also kind of part of the problem because there's so much information, there's so much validation with everything that can be, I mean, even he even alludes to it or even flat out says it in this poem, talking about flat earth, there's other conspiracies that are just kind of silly out there. And I think when you seek your truth, however wrong, you can create convictions about things that can almost be dangerous. I mean, again, look at what we're all experiencing, what we're all going through and what's going on today and how it feels like there's even a greater amount of manipulation because of people are listening to voices that are loud but can also validate things that are just, in my humble opinion, a little bit asinine. So I think that it's healthy. It's healthy to explore all these different options, but it's also kind of detrimental if there's a, if there's forces or there's agendas that are enforcing things that are not true for other purposes. So I appreciate the message, but I can also take it as kind of frustrating personally because of what we're all going through these days.
Oh, absolutely. I get what you're saying there, Jeremy. I think that opening line, the truth and nothing but, it kind of reminds me of the old TV shows when someone got on the stand, you swore on the Bible, you swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth to help you go. God, I do. And the unfortunate surprise there is today, no one knows what the truth is because I think that opening line kind of hit on the notion of just recently, and although it's not being reported, Facebook had to admit in open court that their fact-checking was just an opinion, not fact, not checking. It was just the opinion of the person doing the fact-checking. So all those thoughts of, well, this is false and this is untrue, this is absolutely false, this is partly false, was a load of BS that got stamped on a whole lot of people, ideas, thoughts that eventually got wiped away from the internet as well. Just because, hey, we don't want to see that stuff. We don't want you to know that stuff is out there. We don't want you thinking clearly or deferentially to anything except that which we propose as truth, which is kind of the obvious thought that rolls within us. Because now they're even look at the dictionary and the and such, and words which mean one thing last week, last month, last year have been changed to fit a new motif in what it means today. I mean, like vaccine. It used to mean that when you got a vaccine, it immunized you against that particular morphology that could harm you. Today's idea of what a vaccine is, oh, it introduces something that can keep you or aid you in not getting it, which kind of produces the thought, yo, why aren't people actually offering up their thoughts as to why the need to change that which has been rolling 100 years as to how it works and how it is supposed to work, just to change the motif into, oh, this is what we want you to believe now. And I like the bottom end of this. I put aside all the derision, happy with your own decisions because you took the time, energy, and effort to maybe not turn off the TV and radio, but actually listen to both ends and then walk your own path as to the truth by doing a little bit of investigation yourself, which is clearly the easy thing to do, which most people don't bother doing because they think they don't have the time. They'd rather believe the talking head that at that max headroom that delivers the words that you wish to hear. I see that, Kenny. Thank you very much.
And I was just having this conversation the other day. I mean, I remember, I'm not gonna assume anybody else's age, but I remember 30, 40 years ago when we got all of our information from three networks. And I'm not naive enough to think that we weren't being, that an agenda was not being followed when news or information was all provided just through very limited sources. But it seems like today when you get all of your information from so many sources, it's almost detrimental because, again, you don't know what the agendas are and there's no check on what's real and what's not. So I think it's exciting and it's empowering, but at the same time, having those things at your fingertips, having all of that information readily available can almost be scary because you don't know what's driving a lot of it.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're right. Back then it was only three. Now, God, if you look at the Chirons and the word choices they make, they're all using the same words over and over and over again as pounding theology into the mind. And the Chirons all have the same bloody rolling epiphanies across the screen from station to station to station to station. Back then, too, all the radio stations, magazines, newspapers were all owned by separate entities. Today, 92% of all the media is owned by five companies. And that's a problem.
Absolutely. Great observations there, Rex.
All right. So what are we indulging next?
All right. Up next, we have Reality Bites number 13 by Ted Markstein. And Rex, go ahead and give that a refresh, please.
Reality Bites number 13 by Ted Markstein. Identity, which we so prize, now dies before our lying eyes, and naught is not what we suppose. Our emperors now all unclose. Out here, outside of time and space, we remnants run our dying race. All that we had, we now have lost. We never reckoned on the cost. We, now so blind that once did see, now know not what we used to be. As darkness overcomes the light, we stand condemned to endless night. And Paul, nicely done. I like that. And Jeremy, why don't you kick us off?
Very well. Very well read. Very cool poem. And it's funny how often I use that reference of the emperor is not wearing any clothes, and how many people don't know that reference of that old fable of the emperor is wearing no clothes. And I like that. I like how it was referenced here in the first. And I think it's everything that we were just talking about, guys. I think everything that's said in this poem is everything we were just talking about. People are starting to recognize things. People are starting to have exposure to things, but what's true and what's not true, again, is still the problem. I think it's important. I think information is a very powerful drug. I think we should be careful how we take it. But I like how this poem pitches that thought.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Jeremy. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, well said there, Jeremy. And I like this all the way through. I just particularly like the reference to our emperors now unclothed. I like that he used emperors rather than just an emperor. Like, you know, there's more than one person that's the problem. And all we had, we now have lost. We never reckoned on the cost. Too oftentimes we when we make those decisions, any decision, we don't look at the cost. And I like that he brings in the word condemned at the end. We stand condemned to endless night. It's so much about, you know, who we choose to follow, how we choose to not think for ourselves and just believe what's, right in front of us. So just excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, we've hit on this idea throughout the evening, and you're right, Jeremy, the thoughts to power and the thoughts expounded upon us daily and the collateral damage that can come within that. But within that, too, we're also seeing, even though they don't like reporting on it, they're actually having to do some because they see both sides of the equation now. And if they don't hit some on the middle ground, they're going to find themselves wallowing in a really serious guerrilla armpit menage of, you're going down the toilet, and the toilet is going down fast, motif of the media, so to speak. Those truths they wouldn't have spoken last year, they're starting to speak of now because they see a bit of the writing on the wall. And a lot more people are actually seeing the reality of that being exposed now, our emperors now all unclothed, because we don't have anything that keeps that light, that motif, from not being shone in our eyes. That would be a huge war or some other manipulation of the planet, like a pandemic has been able to keep that angle down. So things are being exposed, which they do not enjoy, whether it's from the emperors themselves or the media who like to hide those foibles of the emperors, because it feeds into their coffers and their part of their power base. And I think the back end of this is darkness overcomes the light. We stand condemned to endless night. I think next year, early next year, we're going to see something that's going to clog the news cycle, and it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be ugly, and I think it's going to be purposeful. Anyway, to you, Cam.
Yeah. All right. Well said there, Rex. All right. Up next, I'm actually going to read my poem, which was inspired by, it was a different, it fits in with the show because it was written to a Robinson Jeffers poem, but the one called The Bloody Sire. And so I highly recommend reading that poem after the show when you get a chance. He's got some awesome, that poet has really some awesome poetry. All right. And this is Scattered Pieces of Autopsies, and it goes like this. The world is speaking in visions of violence, spilled guts upon shorelines. Don't tie her to the flagpole, rise her high, and declare your patriotism. She already hates you enough. Scattered pieces of autopsies in the lands of the Trojan lions. Be silent. The show is starting. Tally-ho, ride ye scurvy wenches, to where knickers fall to the sound of Padre's voice. Don't worry, the Reaper grins, the silver in his teeth may save your soul, or it may not. But give, because you love your homeland. There's blood seeping into the garden, the menstruation of the witch to bring forth life and feed the hungry. Fangs dying upon the skin of lambs, stripped bare, they cry for a warm teat, but suckle the despair that slithers beneath the bridge. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jeremy, this one's definitely yours to start with.
I'm happy. I'm happy that Pam presented this. Like, I remember she posted it.
I thought you might.
I remember when she posted it and reading through it, and I was giggling to myself thinking of Pam the Pirate and how this one is just, because what I appreciate most about your pen, Pam, is that you always surprise me at how deep you can go with some of your themes. And I always appreciate how much you put into it. And this one specifically, I went, holy cow, she went for it. And the part that I really like is there's almost the interlude. There's the interlude of the first, I don't know, quarter of the poem. And then you have those lines that were my favorite. It says, be silent. The show is now starting. And then all of a sudden it's just tally-ho, here we go, and bam, the rest of the poem came. I enjoyed it the first time I read it. I enjoyed hearing your read of it, and I'm glad you brought it to us tonight.
Thank you.
thank you, Jeremy. That was nice. I hit on that note, too, be silent, the show is starting. All right, where's the popcorns? And I did that right before that one, in the land of Trojan lions. Boy, does that speak of the illegitimacy of some who are inside weeding out the ugliness to pull a rabbit from the hat in the name of communistic entities, so to speak. And fall to the sound of Padre's voice. Boy, does that kind of hit on the note of porn comes in many forms, especially in church venues. And don't worry about the Reaper grins and the silver in his teeth may save his soul. That hits me with the sort of the shekels that what's his name took for giving up Christ, Judas.
Yes.
And the menstruation of the witch to bring forth life and feed the hungry. that kind of there's ugliness in that too. That kind of hits on the notion of poison. Fangs bind upon the skin of lambs, stripped bare, they cry for a warm deed. There's hunger in that one. But stuck over the spear that splits beneath the bridge. It kind of hits on the notion of people who are willing to stuck on the teat of governmental ease. Why? Hey, I don't have to do anything just to get it. They give it to me. So why not?
I always enjoy and appreciate your observations, Rex. Thank you.
All right. What we got next? We got at least one more to roll into.
Right, right. I'm hoping to get a couple more done, but at least one more. We have up next 102 Words by Duncan Ross Bell. And this is actually the gold winner from the All Artists Exorcism contest. And we do have a recording for that. So let me mosey over to the studio, and here we go.
102 Words. A life in so few words. I am. Hurt me. I'll come back for thirds. Fair game. Bluffing. Now as the strife grows long, the dull replaces strong. Swallow. Replace the glow. Leave fragments and wander further away. Sunken steps print nothing. Mother's claim, wind decay. Replace each day with dawn. Which side of right was drawn? Feast for sustenance. The cycle drains the song. The bridge is moving on. The split becomes divide. A mumbling aside. Meet for the relevance. I'm an ocean in my way. Bruised wings in constant sway. Where the forward looks past. And the now is dismay.
Great read, Duncan. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam. What you got?
I really liked this. I liked how he went with the short lines ranging from anywhere from 4 to 1 words. I thought it was a strong opening, a life in so few words. I am, hurt me, I'll come back for thirds, fair game, bluffing. You know, too often we are willing to set ourselves out there to be hurt over and over again. I also really liked sunken steps print nothing, mother's clay and wind decay. There's really, to me, this whole idea of this search for our own identity, the search for relevance, this idea of breaking away from what family tradition says we're supposed to be. You know, and the ending's strong, too. I'm an ocean in my way, bruised wings in constant sway, where the forward looks past. And the now is dismay. It's just so difficult when you feel trapped in the now that weighs heavy on you to move forward, you know. And the phrase meet for mumbling aside, meet for relevance, almost like that idea of we just keep picking at the bone. But what we truly need is the meat, the sustenance, and to find who we are. So just a great take on the prompt and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, I really like how you keyed in on that because I agree, Pam. I mean, choosing your comments on relevance and sustenance, that's what I was picking up on as well because I think a lot of what this speak to me, how this spoke to me was how we define ourselves and how we identify and how we even create or evolve our own self is based upon, you know, where we came from and specifically family. And I think there's a lot of that in this poem on how family is what tore them down or what they were struggling with. I really keyed in on mother's clay and then how it went to feast for sustenance. And then even further down when it got to talking about meat for relevance. I mean, I just took that as the id of who you are and where all that comes from is from your early ties or how you were brought up or what your origins are. And so I think that was the struggle and what the angst was in this poem was trying to identify that and how they were struggling, how they almost were betrayed by it or they were identifying later that it wasn't what they had want to become, or the fact that the development didn't happen the way they had envisioned from the start. So I appreciated your words, Pam. I thought that was a great analysis.
Nice. Thank you, Jeremy. Let's see what I got. Now, as the strife grows long, the dull replace the strong, swallow replace that glow. It's got almost a quiet notation there to good times make weak men, weak men make strong times, and strong times weak men make. Oh, I forgot. Damn. Now I've forgotten the damn thing. Weak men make the strong. Weak men make for bad times. Bad times make the strong men. Strong men make for good times. Then you roll that revolution around again. And that's what that that dull replaces strong kind of hits me as. Swallow replace the glow. There's that notation of, hey, you can't leave that as it sits in the moment. Then you also leave fragments and wander further away. Sunken steps print nothing. Mother's clay and wind decay. Mother's clay, kind of an earthen notion in that we can't just imprint ourselves on earth, so to speak, and then just walk away from that which we've left in our wake. And again, the cycle drains the song, the bridge is moving on, the split becomes divide. Kind of hits on that notion of goalposts keep being pushed further and further away, so that there is that divide. And meet for relevance is kind of a notation of being pleasantly appeased, that which you voice, and you get your 30 shekels of silver, your divine piece of meat in the moment, your 15 minutes of fame, so to speak. And the thought of, I'm an ocean in my way, and that thought of rolling easily, bruised wings and constant sway. Yes, you're going to get pummeled along the way when the forward looks past, and the now is dismay. Darkness hits on that bottom end of kind of a, things are broken and need to be fixed. Oh, all right, Pam, I know we're not going to get to another one.
All right, yeah, I don't think we're going to fit one more in, which is absolutely fine. We'll just carry it. We have a few carryovers for next week that'll go, you know, we'll read before getting into whatever your topic will be. By the way, great observations on that poem there. What's that?
A joke, dismember dependencies.
All right. Well, great show tonight, Rex.
Yes, a lot of enlightening thoughts, some humor here and there to indulge with, and a great evening. Great show, Pam. Jeremy, thank you. Aphasiana, thank you for staying on board and for the reading comments. Truly appreciate it. And come back again next week and we'll do it all over again. All right, gang. Good night and have a nice evening or early morning.